Met Michiel.
Album specials.
Editors.
3FM.
Is de band Snowfield. Komt dit je misschien bekend voor? Ze waren ooit ook bekend als Pride en als Pilot, maar ze zijn definitief doorgebroken onder de naam...
Hi, my name is Tom from Editors and you're listening to 3FM.
Editors. Uitgegroeid tot een band van headlinerformaat, goed voor miljoenen verkochte albums wereldwijd en een band die het eigenlijk vanaf het prille begin in ons land heel erg goed heeft gedaan. Sterker nog, hun allereerste gig buiten de UK was in Paradiso Amsterdam op het London Calling Festival van 2005.
We're back with Editors, this is our first single.
That was our first trip across to Europe. I think it's what a lot of UK bands do. It's like one of the first trips, isn't it, abroad? And yeah, I mean, going to the Paradiso and being in Holland, it's a great experience, you know. I remember it very well. And it was the room was packed and people were enjoying it. And, you know, to be in a different country and for people to get your music, it's a nice thrill.
To be in a room which was rammed, it was hot and sweaty. So, yeah, it was an amazing feeling.
Dat was in 2005. Single Bullets was toen net uit en later dit jaar zou ook het debuutalbum The Backroom uitkomen. De band bestond toen al een jaartje of drie, onder verschillende namen. De vier bandleden, zanger Tom, bassist Russell, drummer Ed en gitarist Chris, kenden elkaar van de universiteit in Stafford. Daar speelden ze hun allereerste gig, toen nog met een andere drummer. Ed, die niet veel later de vaste drummer van Editors zou worden, stond bij die eerste gig wel in het publiek.
Some show in Stafford.
To load of uni mates.
Yeah.
Ed was in the audience, he wasn't in the band at that point. It was his birthday, we played him happy birthday.
Yeah.
We weren't very good.
Na de universiteit verhuisden ze allemaal naar Birmingham op aanraden van hun manager. Ze waren vastbesloten een band te beginnen en het te gaan maken. En hadden iemand gevonden die ze wilde managen. Ze gingen niet naar Londen, niet naar Manchester, nee, ze kozen voor Birmingham. Daar in die grauwe fabriekstad in de Engelse Midlands begon het Editors-avontuur eigenlijk pas echt.
Just went to Birmingham. And you know, had a good time. It's quite a slow city, and you know, there's a lot of space and industrial units, and you know, it's pretty cheap. You know,
well, those things are helpful when you.
They are for us. You know, I don't know how like young bands go to like London and you know, manage to you know, I guess they just
feed
starve.
Themselves.
They're really hungry and, you know, must rehearse in a shoe cupboard.
De huren waren laag en er waren veel podia om op te treden. Dat waren dé redenen voor de jongens om te verkassen naar Birmingham. Wat trouwens ook de thuisbasis was van...
ELO. Duran Duran. To the streets.
I came to this world with nothing. And I leave with nothing but love. Everything else is just horror.
Het is weliswaar de grootste stad in Engeland na Londen, maar heel erg sexy is Brummy, zoals Birmingham heet, niet.
I don't think Birmingham's ever had a strong scene that defines it. The people in Birmingham are very different from a Liverpool or a Manchester. And it's not like they're not proud of being. I'll tell you they're from Manchester.
Tom woont tegenwoordig met zijn vrouw, DJ Edith Bowman, en zijn kids in Londen. Ed woont in New York, maar Russell woont nog steeds in Birmingham. En dat is ook nog steeds de plek waar de band het liefst repeteert.
We still, even though Russell's the only member of the band now that lives in Birmingham, and we rehearse, we still rehearse there. We spend, over the last 2-3 years, we spent probably over a year and a half rehearsing there.
Het duurde nog een jaar of twee voor Editors een platendeal kregen en iets konden gaan opnemen. In 2005 kwam hun debuutsingle uit, Bullets, die gedraaid werd op alternatieve radiostations. BBC-DJ Zane Lowe riep hem uit tot single van de week en binnen een dag waren alle exemplaren uitverkocht. Toch duurde het lang voordat er verder echt iets gebeurde met de band. Het duurde namelijk nog een jaar voordat het debuutalbum, The Backroom, echt aansloeg.
That first record, especially in modern terms, it didn't break overnight. It took quite a while for that record to connect on any kind of wide level. You know, we did a lot of touring with it and released a lot of singles, some of them more than once. And it certainly wasn't an overnight success. It wasn't in the UK, especially. It wasn't until a year and a half after we released it that the album kind of climbed back up the charts and suddenly we were, you know, had any level of significance really.
In de zomer dat het debuutalbum uitkwam, stonden Editors alweer op Nederlandse bodem. Ditmaal op Lowlands. Bummer was wel dat de band dan wel hier stond, maar hun apparatuur, nou, die stond nog lekker op de band van EasyJet in Birmingham. Dus ze moesten apparatuur van andere bands lenen om te kunnen optreden. Alsof een festival optreden al niet spannend genoeg was.
Yeah, it's terrifying. I mean, those gigs at that point in our career were terrifying anyway. It was our first experiences on those big festival stages, and they're not very easy when you're starting out. There's so many reasons why it's hard work to get up and do the shows. You know, hearing yourself, communicating with such a big audience, playing slightly differently. You know, it was a very foreign environment for us.
You know, you don't take your monitor engineer. It sounds terrible.
Yeah.
You know,
you've had no sleep, you know, literally no sleep, because you had to get up at 5 a.m. when you got to bed at 3 the night before so you could get the flight to, you know,
EasyJet didn't bring your equipment. It was still sitting there when we got back.
Still in the, it was in the, by the
it was,
carousel.
It never left, so yeah.
Knew about it because they'd been told, thank God. There was a warmth and a bigger sense of appreciation because we'd made the effort and tried to do the show. I've listened back to recordings of some of those songs, which you can do on YouTube, and it's fucking terrible. It sounds so bad. I think I'll never forget that show.
Ondanks die pech was in Nederland de liefde voor Editors definitief geboren. Toen album nummer 2, An End Has a Start, uitkwam, was de band al uitgegroeid tot Pinkpop Mainstage proporties. Pinkpop Mainstage, ja, midden op de dag, dat dan wel. Nog zeker niet de headliner.
On the second record, I mean, we play Pinkpop Mainstages, but you're on at like 4 p.m. and I don't know, I think you're at a funny point generally, because you're still a young band and you're still trying to find your feet. You haven't done those big stages and you haven't done them at night.
You're not the headliner,
which a lot of people are waiting for those bands that are on just after you. So.
Tom worstelde de eerste jaren heel erg met het optreden voor een groot publiek. Hij vond het eng en hij had moeite om zijn draai te vinden.
The first album of, you know, loaded all those shows, you know, points were quite tense for me and quite hard work. Festivals come along and those stages get bigger. By the time of our second record, and there's really enormous crowds, it's terrifying, and I'm still learning and finding new ways of doing things on stage and stuff, but once you trigger that in your mind, those big stages at festivals, suddenly where they become enjoyable places to be, especially when they're going well.
De kritiek in het begin op de band was dan ook dat ze zo serieus waren. Er kon nauwelijks een lachje vanaf. Het ontbrak een beetje aan schwung, aan datgene wat een live optreden zo opwindend kan maken. Technisch gezien was het allemaal hartstikke goed, tenminste als de eigen spullen er waren, maar er miste nog iets.
Music very seriously when we started, and getting up, and we never dreamt about being performers. It was just about making songs together in a rehearsal room and recording them, and that was kind of what we loved about it. And
het kostte de band behoorlijk wat tijd, eigenlijk tot album nummer 3, om onder de knie te krijgen hoe je een mensenmassa kunt entertainen.
It takes a while to get used to those big stages. Yeah, I don't think any band can really do it until they've done quite a few records.
When the time comes that you're no longer here, fall down to my knees, begin my nightmare, words spill from my drunken mouth. I just can't keep on falling. I keep on with the racing rocks and do my best to win.
you are performing, you know. People are there to be entertained. They want to hear your songs, and I guess we just kind of lightened up a bit and understood that a little bit more.
En ze leren dat van R.E.M. Editors verzorgden hun voorprogramma in 2008 en zagen een band die ze intens bewonderen het publiek bespelen.
You know, 2008 or 9 we toured with R.E.M. and watching, you know, Michael Stipe and that band go up on stage every night and have that perfect balance of being a great band, not too perfect sounding, you know, in terms of the way that what they're doing, it's like it's still a rock band, but then also being wonderful performers and entertaining the crowd and being cocky, you know, and kind of playing up a little bit every now and again.
That's me in the corner. That's me in the spot. Like losing my religion. Trying to keep up you. And I don't know if I can do it.
R.E.M. is de band die alle leden van Editors noemen als een grote inspiratiebron. Vanwege hun muziek natuurlijk.
Always a reference point for us, you know. Guitar sounds and just songs, you know. Beautiful songs.
Maar ook vanwege hoe ze omgaan met de band. En hoe ze het al zo lang, al meer dan 30 jaar, volhouden. Ja, inmiddels zijn ze uit elkaar, maar toen ging het echt al 30 jaar heel erg goed. Ook door de moeilijke periodes.
You know, they've taken decisions and gone through bad times as well in the band, you know. Dealt with a member leaving.
Een bandlid verliezen, daar weten Editors alles van sinds gitarist Chris in 2012 uit de band stapte. En dat was geen makkelijke tijd. De maanden voor Chris vertrek worstelde de band al met nieuw materiaal.
I think in some ways we were mourning it whilst we were still trying to make it work together. That was when it was hard, when it was like really just...
Yeah.
We were still rehearsing as a four piece when we were all there and then it was just like, oh, this isn't very good anymore, guys.
Wat was er misgegaan? Even terug naar 2009, toen het derde album uitkwam, In This Light and On This Evening. Het was een meer elektronische plaat die ze opnamen met hulp van de legendarische producer Flood. Flood is de man achter de meeste albums van U2. En ook Depeche Mode.
He's a legend, and we love him to bits. He's totally got the same sense of humour as all of us. You know, he's cynical, sarcastic, grumpy old man. He's not old man, man. And we loved him. And to have him, he was kind of part of the band, wasn't he? He was like part of our, like, you know, sonic adventure.
Bij album nummer 3 ging de samenwerking met Flood fantastisch. Editors wilden een iets andere sound. Iets wat paste bij hun groeiende bekendheid en de steeds groter wordende zalen waar ze optraden. En Flood was de man die ze zochten.
Decisions, but when we make records, we don't really care about what we've done previously. You know, stylistically, we just do whatever feels right with the tunes. And I think, you know, we could have designed our four records to sound more similar to each other. But if we'd have done that, I don't know if we'd be sat here anyway, so...
Toegegeven, de fans van het eerste uur moesten wel een beetje wennen aan het nieuwe geluid, maar het was eigenlijk precies wat Editors nodig hadden om echt een grote stadion act te worden.
It kicks like a sleep twitch.
So the song with Papillon, I remember that on our third record, which now, you know, if we didn't play, people would feel shortchanged, but that certainly took a year and a half, like till it, like people, you know. Now it's like a, you know, a high point of the set, really.
Eat Raw Meat, that song, you know, that took a couple of years before people really enjoyed it, and you know, we play it differently. You know, Ed plays it with a full kit and. So now it's a big rock song now.
In 2010 doken ze weer met producer Flood de studio in voor album nummer 4. Maar het werkte niet. Deze keer ging het gewoon niet lekker. Alles wat bij album 3 zo lekker ging, ging nu stroef en moeizaam. Chris wilde door met de elektronische sounds van album 3. Maar Tom, Russell en Ed wilden iets anders. Maar ja, wat? Ploeteren. Het was gewoon geen leuke tijd voor de band.
The romantic notion is that, you know, we would be best friends forever. We'd never have wives or, you know, girlfriends. We'd always stay in the same house from the age of 18 and finish, or keep going till the age of the Stones and just, you know, be best buds forever. With the rocky road that we traveled over the last 2 years and the things we went through with Chris, was discovering that me, Russell, and Ed do want to keep doing this properly, and we're very passionate in the songs that we make together, and it was about, we didn't want that to stop. It was something that we've learned, but as a four piece, you know, that was no longer working like that. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, it was a funny few years.
Dan, april 2012. Chris is definitief uit Editors gestapt. En dat had zomaar het einde van de band kunnen betekenen. Of op zijn minst het begin van een heel, heel, heel lange pauze. Maar het liep anders, dankzij Rock Werchter. Editors hadden al een headlinespot op Werchter 2012 in de agenda staan. Tom wilde eigenlijk door het verlies van Chris de show afzeggen, maar Russell en Ed haalden hem over dat niet te doen. En die Werchter-show, 30 juni 2012, werd een van de belangrijkste momenten uit de geschiedenis van de band.
Now you talk about career highlights and, you know, in an earlier question and gigs that you remember. That's, you know, that's certainly right there in the very, very top of, you know, things that jumps into my mind because it was so significant. Because we were a new band, you know, playing under the same banner and playing some of the old songs, but we were playing new songs as well. We started with a new song, and it was a risk. You know, when you take a risk, you know, because I didn't want to do the show initially. When, you know, when we made the decision to go on without Chris, it was like, well, let's cancel that. You know, I know there will be a lot of problems with that, just, you know, cancelling a show of such size. But I was like, we can't deal with that at the moment. But, you know, Russell and Ed and our management as well working, I've not of the same opinion, and, you know, in the end, nah, it was the reason that everything came together so well, and with a bit of luck.
Tom stuiterde zowat het podium af en de rest van de band is een kielzog, inclusief de twee nieuwe leden die waren aangetrokken om Chris te vervangen. De nieuwe gitarist Justin en toetsenist Elliot.
It was an amazing show, you know, everything, it couldn't have been any better, you know, from us or the audience. So to come off stage, it was just glowing relief, happiness. It was brilliant. It was okay, now let's go make a record.
En wat deden ze? Ze gingen naar Nashville.
We always wanted to go to America and make a record, so we had to do it. It's one of those, you know, that's what we want to do. Yeah, we went over to Nashville with Jakir, made a record there.
Om daar een plaat te maken met producer Jack O'Reilly King, bekend van onder andere Kings of Leon.
Rock record, and we thought, Jakir had made some great sounding rock records.
Na al het gedoe, de stress, de ruzies, de frustraties, de pijnlijke beslissingen, het vertrek van Chris, was het tijd voor iets simpelers. De wijsheid van Amerika, de totale verandering van de omgeving, het deed de band meer dan goed.
We just wanted to be, you know, a simpler, you know, more organic record, you know, strings, horns, and for it to sound like the band. And, you know, just let some of the songs breathe a little bit more.
Het voelde als een nieuwe start, bijna als een nieuwe band.
It's the first two records that we grouped them together because of Chris's presence. Mm-hmm. And the last one does feel like the beginning of something new.
Misschien zelfs het begin van een nieuwe trilogie.
We're contracted for another one.
This year, you know, we'll start writing and rehearsing songs for what will become record 5. I think we're all very eager and excited to start that journey.
Van duistere indie rock naar elektronische stadion rock en terug naar ouderwetse rock. Wie weet wat Editors nog voor ons in petto hebben. Hun muzikale invloeden zijn in ieder geval divers genoeg. Bassist Russell is de muzikale veelvraat van de band. Hij kwam in Editors als een halve metalhead, maar nu heeft hij een heel gevarieerde muzieksmaak.
When I went to university and met Tom, I was mostly listening to crap rock music. And you know, I obviously did like some things, but I was a little bit more of a rocker. So Spiritualized, I think, were one of the first bands that I got. It's definitely more credible, more arty, but still noisy.
In elke stad waar hij met de band komt, checkt hij of er ergens een vinylzaakje is om zijn collectie aan te vullen.
I think on the second record I went through a David Bowie stage and I bought every Bowie record and listened to Bowie non-stop.
Russell has developed over the last few years a unbelievable appetite for music. I think it's coincided with mine kind of waning a little bit. Brutally honest, I listen to less music than I used to.
Tom is door de jaren heen juist minder muziek gaan luisteren, maar hij heeft wel een paar songs die hem heel dierbaar zijn.
I don't know, you'd need to ask my wife really about things like that, songs that have special significance, because don't know, I'm quite manly about it and don't really don't linger long in the memory. There's a Lemonhead song called Rudy with a Flashlight, which is what I named my son after, which is a beautiful, I think it was just a B-side. So that song always gets me.
Rudy with a flashlight, playing out in the yard, shining it straight up.
Zijn allereerste single weet hij ook nog heel goed, maar dat was wel iets heel anders.
I remember the first record I asked my dad to buy me, which was so I didn't save up for it myself, but it was the best of Status Quo. I really like and still like that song In the Army Now, which is like their sad song.
Smiling faces as you wait to land, but once you get there, no one gives a damn. You're in the army now.
Een album dat de hele band beïnvloed heeft was het debuutalbum van Elbow, Asleep in the Back.
When we first went to university, Elbow released their record. Just the whole ethos of that band, the aroma, you know, that Manchester kind of, you know, we've had a lot of pints and, you know, we're a bunch of mates that have been around for a long time. You know, I was straight in with that record. It was, you know, it was a big thing.
Ze werkte zelfs ooit samen met Guy Garvey.
You know, we ended up doing a recording together on the first album, which was a B-side. I don't know, it was in contention for the album for a long time.
En naast Elbow zijn ook The Strokes en Interpol van grote betekenis geweest voor editors.
Well, at the time the Elbow record came out, it was also the time that the first Strokes record came out. It's a classic, you know, a real defining record of that time as well. We were becoming friends, you know, bonding over records like The Strokes record, Elbow record, Interpol first record came out at the same time, which was listened to a lot by us, we love.
Het zijn meer de Amerikaanse dan de Britse bands die editors beïnvloed hebben, dus in die zin is hun uitstapje naar de USA niet zo heel gek geweest. Deze bands beïnvloeden editors nog steeds.
Because at heart, quite a lot of the songs I will write, when I write them to start with on my own, will kind of be a bit more like In the Army Now by Status Quo than The Rat by The Walkman. You know, they'll tend to be kind of sadder songs, and then when they go through the machine that was us four at the time, you know, they change and they become something that we all like. So like Russell said, there wasn't a certain energy injected into our songs at that time because of some of those records.
Maar hun meest favoriete song, die nog steeds regelmatig wordt gedraaid in de tourbus en die zelfs aan Justin en Elliot werd voorgelegd als een soort test, is van een onbekendere band waarmee ze langdurig door Amerika toerden. Mobius Band. Strokes, Interpol, R.E.M., Elbow, dat zijn namen die niet zouden ontbreken op een Spotify-lijstje van editors. Maar ook van hun eigen materiaal hebben ze zo hun favorieten. Dat zijn echter juist niet de grote hits die ze avond aan avond al spelen.
On the records, it's usually ones that we don't play. You know, some of the slower numbers that, I don't know, we haven't played. The ones that we play all the time, sometimes I don't think about playing them.
Conflict is too strong a word, but there's always this kind of slight struggle between the songs that we play live and, you know, I guess the songs that we're known for. And we, you know, we like and love and are part of us. And, you know, I hear Munich on the radio every now and again. I think, shit, that was good. You know, I understand. I'm very proud of that, you know.
Nee, de nummers waar de band zelf het meeste mee heeft, zijn de nummers die eigenlijk niet of nauwelijks live te spelen zijn. Omdat ze bijvoorbeeld zijn opgenomen met een heel groot orkest, of omdat ze niet goed passen in bestaande setlists. En de balans vinden tussen nummers die je lekker live kunt spelen en de nummers die ze zelf graag horen, dat is eigenlijk de kern van editors.
That place in the middle is, you know, what I guess what we're always trying to find. I guess what being in a band is all about, isn't it?